This is Audible.
Penguin Random House Audio presents The Winter of the Witch, Book 3 of the Winter Night Trilogy by Catherine Arden. Read for you by Kathleen Gatti. To my brothers, by birth and by adoption, Sterling, RJ, Garrett, I love you. The sea is fair in the storm shadow, the sky wondrous without its blue. But trust me, on the rock, the girl excels the wave, the sky, and the storm. A.S. Pushkin. Part 1. Chapter 1. Maria Marevna. Dusk at the end of winter, and two men crossed the dooryard of a palace scarred by fire. The dooryard was a snowless waste of water and trampled earth. The men sank to their ankles in the muck, but they were speaking intently, heads close together, and did not heed the wet. Behind them lay a palace full of broken furniture, smoke-stained, the screenwork smashed on the staircases. Before them lay a charred ruin that had been a stable.
"Chelubay disappeared in the confusion," said the first man bitterly. "We were busy saving our own skins."
A smear of soot blackened his cheek, blood crusted in his beard. Weary hollows, like blue thumbprints, marred the flesh beneath his gray eyes. He was barrel-chested, young, with the fey energy of a man who has driven himself past exhaustion to a surreal and persistent wakefulness. Every eye in the dooryard followed him. He was the Grand Prince of Moscow.
"Our skins, and a little more," said the other man, a monk, with a touch of grim humor. For against all hope, the city was mostly intact and still theirs.
The night before, the Grand Prince had come close to being deposed and murdered, though few people knew that. His city had nearly burned to ash. Only a miraculous snowstorm had saved them. Everyone knew that. A swath of black gashed the heart of the city, as though the hand of God had fallen in the night, dripping fire from its nails.
"It was not enough," said the Grand Prince. "We may have saved ourselves, but we made no answer for the treachery."
All that bitter day, the prince had reassuring words for every man who caught his eye, had calm orders for the men wrangling his surviving horses and hauling away the charred beams of the stable. But the monk, who knew him well, could see the exhaustion and the rage just beneath the surface.
"I'm going out myself tomorrow with all that can be spared," the prince said. "We will find the Tatars and we will kill them." "Leave Moscow now, Dmitri Ivanovich?" asked the monk, with a touch of disquiet.
A night and a day without sleep had done nothing for Dmitri's temper.
"Are you going to tell me otherwise, Brother Alexander?" he asked, in a voice that made his attendants flinch. "The city cannot do without you," said the monk. "There are dead to mourn. There are granaries lost, and animals, and warehouses. Children cannot eat vengeance, Dmitri Ivanovich."
The monk had no more slept than the Grand Prince. He could not quite mask the edge in his own voice. His left arm was wrapped in linen where an arrow had gone into the muscle below the shoulder and been dragged through and out again.
"The Tatars attacked me in my own palace after I had made them welcome in good faith," retorted Dmitri,
not troubling to keep the rage from his reply.
"They conspired with the usurper. They fired my city. Is all that to go unavenged, brother?"
The Tatars had not, in fact, fired the city. But Brother Alexander did not say so. Let that mistake be forgotten. It could not be mended now. Coldly, the Grand Prince added,
"Did not your own sister give birth to a dead child in the chaos? A royal infant dead, a swath of the city in ashes. The people will cry out if there is not justice."
"No amount of spilled blood will bring back my sister's child," said Sasha, sharper than he meant.
Clear in his mind was his sister's tearless mourning.
worse than any weeping. Dmitri's hand was on the hilt of his sword.
Will you lecture me now, priest?
Sasha heard the breach between them, scabbed over but unhealed, in the prince's voice.
I will not, said Sasha.
Dmitri, with effort, let go the twining serpents of his sword hilt.
How do you mean to find Chelubey's Tatars? Sasha asked, trying for reason. We have pursued them once already, and rode a fortnight without a glimpse, though that was in deepest winter, when the snow took good tracks. But we found them then, said Dmitri, and his gray eyes narrowed. Did your younger sister survive the night?
Yes, said Sasha wearily. Burns on her face, and a broken rib, Olga says. But she is alive. Now Dmitri looked troubled. Behind him, one of the men clearing away the wreckage dropped the end of a broken roof beam, swearing.
I would not have come to you in time if it weren't for her, Sasha said to his cousin's grim profile. Her blood saved your throne. The blood of many men saved my throne, snapped Dmitri without looking around. She is a liar, and she made a liar of you, the most upright of men.
Sasha said nothing.
Ask her, said Dmitri, turning. Ask her how she did it. Found the Tatars. It can't be only sharp eyes. I have dozens of sharp-eyed men. Ask her how she did it, and I will have her rewarded. I do not think any man in Moscow would marry her, but a country boyar might be persuaded, or enough gold would bribe a convent to take her.
Dmitri was talking faster and faster, his face uneasy, the words spilling out.
Or she may be sent home in safety, or stay in the Tierem with her sister. I will see she has enough gold to keep her comfortable. Ask her how she did it, and I will make all straight for her.
Sasha stared, full of words he could not say.
Yesterday she saved your life, slew a wicked magician, set fire to Moscow, and then saved it all in a single night. Do you think she will consent to disappear? For the price of a dowry? For any price? Do you know my sister?
But of course Dmitri did not. He only knew Vasily Petrovich, the boy she had pretended to be. They are one and the same. Beneath his bluster, Dmitri must realize that. His unease betrayed him. A cry from the men around the stable spared Sasha from answering. Dmitri turned with relief.
Here, he said, striding over.
Sasha trailed, grim-faced, in his wake. A crowd was gathering where two burned roof beams crossed.
Stand aside, Mother of God! Are you sheep at the spring grass? What is it?
The crowd shrank away from the steel in his voice.
Well?
Said Dmitri. One of the men found his tongue.
There, Kosudar, he said.
He pointed at a gap between two fallen posts, and someone thrust down a torch. An echoing gleam came from below, where a shining thing gave back the torchlight. The Grand Prince and his cousin stared, dazzled, doubting.
Gold? Said Dmitri. There? Surely not, said Sasha. It would have melted.
Three men were already hauling aside the timbers that pinned the thing to the earth. A fourth plucked it out and handed it to the Grand Prince. Gold it was, fine gold, and not melted. It had been forged into heavy links and stiff bars, oddly jointed. The metal had an oily sheen. It threw a shimmer of white and scarlet onto the ring of peering faces and made Sasha uneasy. Dmitri held it this way and that, then said,
Ah,
and switched his grip so that he held it by the crown piece, reins over his wrist. The thing was a bridle.
I have seen this before, said Dmitri, eyes alight.
An armful of gold was very welcome to a prince whose coffers had been shrunk by bandits and by fire.
Kasyan Lutovich had it on his mare yesterday, said Sasha,
disliking the reminder of the day before. His eye dwelled with disfavor on the spiked bit.
I would not have blamed her for throwing him. Well, this thing is a forfeit of war, said Dmitri. If only that fine mare herself had not vanished,
Damn those Tatars for horse thieves. A hot meal and wine for all you men. Well done.
The men cheered raggedly. Dmitri handed off the bridle to a steward.
Clean it, the Grand Prince said. Show it to my wife. It might cheer her. Then see it safely locked away.
Is it not strange, Sasha said warily when the reverend steward had departed, the golden thing in his arms, that this bridle should have lain in the stable as it burned, and yet show no hurt?
No, said Dmitri, giving his cousin a hard look. Not odd. Miraculous. Coming on the heels of that other miracle, the snowstorm that delivered us. You are to tell anyone who asks exactly that. God spared this golden thing because he knew our need was great.
The difference between uncanny happenings of the benevolent and the wicked sort was no thicker than rumor, and Dmitri knew it.
Gold is gold. Now, brother.
But he fell silent. Sasha had stilled, his head lifted.
What is that noise?
A confused murmuring was rising from the city outside. A roar and snap, like water on a rocky shore. Dmitri frowned.
It sounds like...
A shout from the gate guard cut him off. A little way down the hill of the Kremlin, the dusk came earlier, and the shadows fell cold and thick over another palace, smaller and quieter. The fire had not touched it, except for singeing from falling sparks. All Moscow roiled with rumors, with sobs, curses, arguments, questions, and yet here a fragile order reigned. The lamps were lit. Servants gathered what could be spared for the comfort of the impoverished. The horses drowsed in their stable. Tidy columns of smoke rose from the chimneys of bakehouse and cookhouse, brewhouse, and the palace itself. The author of this order was a single woman. She sat in her workroom upright, impeccable, starkly pale. Sweeping lines of strain framed her mouth, though she was not yet 30. The dark streaks beneath her eyes rivaled Dmitri's. She had gone into the bathhouse the night before and delivered her third child, dead. In that same hour, her firstborn had been stolen and nearly lost in the horrors of the night. But despite all that, Olga Vladimirova would not rest. There was too much to be done. A steady stream of people came to her, where she sat by the workroom oven. Steward and cook, carpenter, baker, and washerwoman. Each one was dispatched with an assignment and some words of thanks. A pause came between petitioners, and Olga slumped back in her chair, arms wrapped around her belly, where her unborn child had been. She had dismissed her other women hours ago. They were higher in the Tierem, sleeping off the shocks of the night. But one person would not go.
You ought to go to bed, Olya. The household can manage without you until morning.
The speaker was a girl, sitting stiff and watchful on a bench beside the oven. She and the proud princess of Sierpukhov both had long black hair, the plaits wrist-thick, and an elusive similarity of feature. But the princess was delicate, where the girl was tall and long-fingered, her wide eyes arresting in the rough-hewn angles of her face.
You should indeed, said another woman, backing into the room bearing bread and cabbage stew.
It was Lent. They could not eat fat meat. This woman looked as weary as the other two. Her plait was yellow, just touched with silver, and her eyes were wide and light and clever.
The house is safe for the night. Eat this, both of you.
She began briskly ladling out soup,
and then go to bed.
Olga said, slow with exhaustion,
this house is safe, but what of the city? Do you think Dmitri Ivanovich or his poor fool of a wife are sending servants out with bread to feed the children that this night has orphaned?
The girl sitting on the oven bench paled, and her teeth sank into her lower lip. She said,
I am sure Dmitri Ivanovich is making clever plans to take vengeance on the Tatars, and the impoverished will just have to wait. But that does not mean... A shriek from above cut her off, and then the sound of hurrying footsteps. All three women glared at the door with identical expressions. What now? The nurse burst into the room, quivering. Two waiting women panted in her wake. Masha, the nurse gasped. Masha, she's missing. Olga was instantly on her feet. Masha, Maria, was her only daughter, the one who had been stolen from her bed just the night before. Call in the men, Olga snapped. But the younger girl tilted her head as though she were listening. No, said the girl. Every head in the room whipped round. The waiting women and the nurse exchanged dark glances. She's gone outside. Then that, Olga began, but the other interrupted. I know where she is. Let me go and get her. Olga gave the younger girl a long look, which she returned steadily. The day before, Olga would have said that she'd never trust her mad sister with one of her children. Where? Olga asked. The stable. Very well, said Olga. But Vasya, bring Masha back before the lamps are lit, and if she is not there, tell me at once. The girl nodded, looking rueful, and got to her feet. Only when she moved could one see that she was favoring one side. She had a broken rib. Vasilisa Petrovna found Maria where she'd expected, curled up asleep in the straw of a bay stallion stall. The stall door was open, though the stallion was not tied. Vasya entered, but did not wake the child. Instead, she leaned against the great horse's shoulder, pressing her cheek to the silky skin. The bay stallion put his head around and nosed irrepressibly at her pockets. She smiled. Her first real smile of that long day, drew a crust of bread from her sleeve and fed it to him. Olga will not rest, she said. She puts us all to shame.
You have not rested either, returned the horse, blowing warm air onto her face.
Vasya, flinching, pushed him away. His hot breath pained the burns on her scalp and cheek. I do not deserve to rest, she said. I caused the fire. I must make what amends I can.
No, said Solovey and stamped. The Tsar Ptitsa caused the fire, although you should have listened to me before setting her loose. She was maddened with imprisonment.
Where did she come from? Vasya asked. How did Kasyan, of all people, put a bridle on a creature like that? Solovey looked troubled. His ears tilted forward and back, and his tail lashed his flanks.
I do not know how. I remember someone shouting and someone weeping. I remember wings and blood in blue water.
He stamped again, shaking his mane.
Nothing more.
He looked so distressed that Vasya scratched the stallion's withers and said, Never mind. Kasyan is dead and his horse is gone. She changed the subject. The domovoy said Masha was here.
Of course she's here, returned the horse, looking superior. Even if she doesn't know how to speak to me yet, she knows I will kick anyone who tries to hurt her.
This was not an idle threat, coming from 17 hands of stallion.
I cannot blame her for coming to you, Vasya said.
She scratched the horse's withers again, and the stallion's ears flopped with delight.
When I was small, I always ran to the stable at the first sign of trouble. But this is not Lesnaya Zemlya. Olya was frightened when they found her gone. I must take her back.
The little girl in the straw stirred and whimpered. Vasya dropped gingerly to her knees, trying not to jar her sore side, just as Maria came awake, thrashing. The child's head butted into Vasya's ribs, and she narrowly avoided a scream. Her vision went black around the edges.
Hush, Masha, Vasya said when she could speak again. Hush. It's me. It's all right. You're all right. You're safe.
The child subsided, rigid in the older girl's arms.
The big horse put down his head and nosed her hair. She looked up. He lipped her nose very gently, and Maria squeaked out a tiny giggle. Then she buried her face in the older girl's shoulder and wept.
Vasochka, Vasochka, I don't remember anything, she whispered between sobs. I just remember being scared.
Vasya remembered being scared, too. At the child's words, images from the night before crossed her mind like flung darts. A horse of fire rearing up. The sorcerer withering, crumpling to the floor. Maria ensorcelled, blank-faced, obedient. And the Winter King's voice. As I could, I loved you. Vasya shook her head as though motion could dispel memory. You don't have to remember. Not yet, she said gently to the girl. You are safe now. It is over.
It doesn't feel like it is over, whispered the child. I can't remember. How do I know if it's over or not?
Vasya said, trust me, or if you will not, trust your mother or your uncle. No more harm will come to you. Now come. We must get back to the house. Your mother is worried. Maria immediately wrenched away from Vasya, who had little strength to stop her, and wrapped all four limbs around Solovey's foreleg.
No!
Maria shouted, face pressed to the horse's coat.
You can't make me!
An ordinary horse would have reared at such antics or shied, or at the very least hit Maria in the face with his knee. Solovey only stood there, looking dubious. Gingerly, he put his head down to Maria.
You can stay here if you like, he said,
although the child did not understand him. She was crying again, the thin, exhausted wail of a child at the end of endurance. Vasya, sick with pity and anger on the girl's behalf, understood why Maria did not want to go back to the house. She had been taken from that house, subjected to half-remembered horrors. Solovey's large and self-confident presence was nothing if not reassuring.
I have been dreaming,
the little girl mumbled into the stallion's foreleg.
I can't remember anything except for the dreaming. There was a skeleton that laughed at me, and I kept eating cakes more and more, even though they made me sick. I don't want to dream anymore, and I'm not going back to the house. I'm going to live here in this stable with Solovey.
She renewed her grip on the stallion. Vasya could see that unless she chose to pry Maria off and drag her away, a procedure that her broken rib wouldn't bear and Solovey would heartily disapprove of, the girl wasn't going anywhere. Well, let someone else explain to an irascible stallion why Maria could not stay where she was. In the meantime,
very well, Vasya said, and made her voice cheerful. No need to go back to the house unless you wish it. Shall I tell you a story?
Maria's death grip on Solovey loosened.
What kind of story? Any story you like. Ivanushka and Leonushka.
Then Vasya's heart misgave her. Sister, dear sister Leonushka, said the little goat, swim out to me. They are lighting the fires, boiling the pots, sharpening the knives, and I am going to die. But his sister couldn't help him, for she'd already been drowned herself.
No, perhaps not that one, said Vasya hastily and thought. Ivan the Fool, perhaps?
The child pondered, as though the choice of tales were a momentous one that could change the history of that bitter day. For her sake, Vasya wished it were so.
I think, said Maria, that I would like to hear the story of Maria Morevna.
Vasya hesitated. As a child, she had loved the story of Vasilisa the Beautiful, her own fairy tale namesake. But the tale of Maria Morevna would cut deep, perhaps too deep, after the night before. Maria wasn't finished, though.
Tell about Ivan, she said. That part of the story, about the horses.
And then Vasya understood. She smiled and didn't even care that smiling tugged at the burnt skin on her face.
Very well, I will tell that part. If you will let go of Solovey's foreleg, he is not a post.
Maria let go of Solovey reluctantly, and the stallion lay down in the straw so that both girls could curl against his warm side. Vasya wrapped Maria and herself in her cloak and began, stroking Maria's hair.
Prince Ivan tried 3 times to rescue his wife, Maria Morevna, from the clutches of the evil sorcerer Kashchei, she said. But each time he failed, for Kashchei rode the fastest horse in all the world, and moreover, one who understood the speech of men. His horse could outrun Ivan's, no matter how great his start.
Solovey snorted out a complacent, hay-scented breath.
That horse couldn't outrun me, he said. At last, Ivan bid his wife Maria to ask Kashchei how he had come to ride such a matchless horse.
There is a house on chicken legs, replied Kashchei, which stands upon the shore of the sea. A witch lives there, a Baba Yaga, who breeds the finest horses in all the world. You must cross a river of fire to get to her. But I have a magic kerchief that parts the flames. Once you have come to the house, you must ask to serve the Baba Yaga for 3 days. If you serve her well, she will give you a horse. But if you fail, she will eat you.
Solovey slanted a thoughtful ear.
And so, Maria, that brave girl...
Here Vasya tugged her niece's black plait, and Maria giggled,
stole Kashchei's magic handkerchief and gave it to Ivan in secret, and he went away to the Baba Yaga to win the finest horse in all the world for his own. The river of fire was great and terrible, but Ivan crossed it by waving Kashchei's handkerchief and galloping through the flames. Beyond the fire, he found a little house by the shore of the sea. There lived the Baba Yaga and the finest horses in all the world.
Here Maria interrupted.
Could they talk? Like you can talk to Solovey? Can you really talk to Solovey? Does he talk to people? Like the Baba Yaga's horses?
He can talk, said Vasya, putting a hand up to stem the flow of questions.
If you know how to listen. Now hush. Let me finish.
But Maria was already asking her next question.
How did you learn how to listen?
The man in the stable taught me, said Vasya. The Vasila, when I was a child.
Could I learn?
Said Maria. The man in the stable never talks to me.
Yours is not strong, said Vasya. They are not strong in Moscow, but I think you could learn.
Your grandmother, my mother, knew a little magic, they say. I have heard the tale that your great-grandmother rode into Moscow on a magnificent horse, gray as the morning. Perhaps she saw charity just as you and I do. Perhaps there are other horses somewhere, just like Solovey. Perhaps we all...
She was interrupted by a decisive step in the aisle between the stalls.
Perhaps we all, said Varvara's dry voice, are in need of supper. Your sister trusted you to go and get her daughter, and here I find you two rolling in the straw like a couple of peasant boys.
Maria scrambled to her feet. Vasya followed painfully, trying not to favor her injured side. Solovey stood up with a heave, his ears pricked toward Varvara. The woman gave him a strange look. For an instant, there was a kind of remote longing in her face, as a woman looks upon something she coveted long ago. Then, ignoring the stallion, she said,
Come on, Masha. Vasya can finish your story later. The soup will be cold.
The stable had filled up with shadows in the time Vasya and Maria had been talking. Solovey stood still, ears pricked.
What is it? Vasya asked the horse.
Can you hear that?
What?
Said Varvara,
and Vasya looked at her strangely. Surely she hadn't. Maria looked suddenly frightened.
Does Solovey hear someone coming? Someone bad?
Vasya took the girl's hand. I said you are safe, and I meant it. If there is any danger, Solovey will take us all galloping far away.
All right, said Maria in a small voice, but she held tight to Vasya's hand.
They walked out into the blued evening. Solovey went with them, huffing uneasily, his nose at Vasya's shoulder. The blood-colored sunset had diminished to a faint smear in the west, and the air was still and strange. Outside the thick walls of the stable, Vasya could hear what Solovey had heard, the rush and tramp of many feet, and a muted rumble of voices.
You are right. Something is wrong, said Vasya to the horse, low. And curse it, Sasha is not here.
Aloud, she added, Do not worry, Masha, we are safe here behind the gates.
Come on, said Varvara, and made for the outer door, the anteroom, and the stair that would lead them back up to the kerem.
Chapter 2 Reckoning. The dooryard was strangely quiet. The day's bustle had given way to a heavy calm. Varvara slipped through the outer door of the kerem, holding Maria tight by the hand. Vasya turned back at the foot of the stairs, pressed her forehead to Solovey's silky neck. She wondered why it was so still in the dooryard. Many of Olga's guards had died or been wounded in the fighting in the Grand Prince's Dvor. But where were her sister's grooms, her bondsmen? From beyond the gates, the shouting rose.
Wait for me, she told the horse. I'm going up to my sister, but I'll come back soon.
Hurry, Vasya, said the stallion, unease in every line of his body. Up the stairs to Olga's workroom. Vasya's broken rib ran a claw of fire down her side as she climbed. The big, low-ceilinged workroom had a stove for heat, a narrow window for air. It was crowded now. Olga's attendants had been awakened by the noise. The nurse sat near the stove, clutching Olga's son, Daniil. The child was eating bread. He was a placid boy, if a bit bewildered. The women were whispering as though they feared to be heard. An air of disquiet had invaded the palace of Sierpukhov. Vasya found her blistered palms sweating. Olga was standing at the narrow window, looking out beyond the dooryard. Maria ran straight to her mother. The princess put an arm around her daughter's shoulders. The hanging lamps threw sinister shadows, quivering with the breeze of Vasya's entrance. Heads turned, but Vasya only had eyes for her sister, who stood unmoving beside the window.
Olya? Vasya asked. The voices in the room sank to hear her. What is it?
Men. With torches, Olga said, still not turning around. Vasya saw the women exchanging frightened glances, but still she did not understand.
What are they doing?
See for yourself, Olga's voice was calm. But she wore layers of chains draped over her breast, hanging from her headdress. The lamplight shimmered on the gold blindingly, showing the speed of her breathing.
I would send for the guards, added Olga. But we lost so many last night in the fire or fighting the Tatars. The rest are at the city gates. The bondsmen are in the city on errands of mercy. All the men we could spare, and they have not returned. Perhaps some were prevented from coming back. Perhaps others heard something we did not.
Daniil's nurse clutched the child until he squawked. Maria was watching Vasya with hope and blind trust. The aunt who had a magic horse. Trying not to limp, Vasya crossed to the window. As she passed, a few of the women averted their eyes and crossed themselves. The street before the gates of Sierpukhov was thronged with people. Many bore torches. All of them were shouting. Near the open window, their rising voices came clear at last to Vasya's straining ears.
Witch! They shouted. Give us the witch! Fire!
She set the fire.
Varvara said flatly to Vasya, They are here for you. And Maria said,
Vasochka, Vasochka, do they mean you?
Olga's arm was stiff, holding her daughter close.
Yes, Masha, said Vasya dry-mouthed, they do.
The crowd before the gate spread like a river against a rock.
We must bar the door to the palace, Olga said. They might break the gate.
Varvara,
have you sent for Sasha? Vasya interrupted. For men from the Grand Prince.
Whom exactly is she supposed to send? Said Varvara. All the men were in the city when this started. Curse it. I would have had some warning myself, were I not in the Kerem all the day and so weary.
I can go, said Vasya.
Don't be a fool, snapped Varvara. Do you think you'll not be recognized? Do you mean to ride that great bay stallion too, that every man, woman, and child in the city will know on sight? I will go, if anyone.
No one is going, said Olga coolly. Look, we are surrounded.
Vasya and Varvara turned toward the window again. It was true. The pool of torches had spread. The women's whispers were shrill now with fright. The crowd swelled. People were still streaming in from side streets. They began pounding on the gate. Vasya could not make out individual faces in the crowd. The torches dazzled her eyes. The dooryard beneath them lay cold and silent.
Be easy, Vasya, said Olga. Her face was rigidly calm.
Don't be frightened, Masha. Go and sit by the fire with your brother.
To Varvara. Take women to help you. Put whatever you can find against the door. It will buy time if they break the gate. The tower was built to withstand Tatars. We will be all right. Sasha and the Grand Prince will get word of the disturbance. Men will arrive in time.
The shimmer of Olga's golden chains still betrayed her unease.
If it is me they want, Vasya began.
Olga cut her off. Give yourself over. Do you think that can be reasoned with?
A sharp gesture took in the seething mob. Varvara was already chivying women off their benches. The wood was sturdy. It would buy them time. But how much time? Just then a new voice spoke.
Death, it whispered.
Vasya turned her head. The voice belonged to Olga's domovoy, speaking from the oven mouth. His voice was the whisper of settling ashes after the fire has died. Every hair on Vasya's body rose. It is given to the domovoy to know what will happen to his family. In two limping strides, Vasya crossed to the stove. The women stared. Maria's eyes met Vasya's in horror. She, too, had heard the domovoy.
Oh, what will happen? Maria cried.
She seized Daniel's bread, making the child wail, and dropped to her knees on the hearth beside Vasya.
Now, Masha, the nurse began, but Vasya said, Leave her,
in such a tone that the whole room drew back in fright. Even Olga's breath whistled out audibly between her teeth. Maria thrust her bread at the faded domovoy.
Don't say that, she said. Don't say death. You are frightening my brother.
Her brother could neither hear nor see the domovoy, but Maria, in her pride, would not admit that she was frightened.
Can you not protect this house? Vasya asked the domovoy.
No.
The domovoy was little more than a faint voice and a shape cast by the ember light.
The sorcerer is dead. The old woman wanders in darkness. Men have turned their eyes to other gods. There is nothing left to sustain me, to sustain any of us.
We are here, said Vasya, fierce with fear. We see you. Help us.
We see you,
Maria echoed, whispering. Vasya took the child's hand, held it tight. She had already reopened one of her innumerable cuts from the night before. She smeared a bloody hand on the hot brick in the oven mouth. The domovoy shivered and suddenly looked more like a living creature and less like a speaking shadow.
I can buy time, he breathed. A little time. But that is all.
A little time? Vasya was still holding her niece's hand. The women were masked at their backs, wearing various expressions of fright and condemnation.
Black magic, said one. Olga Vladimirova, surely you see.
There is death in our fortunes tonight, Vasya said to her sister, ignoring the others.
Olga's face drew into grim lines.
Not if I can help it. Vasya, take the end of the bench. Help Varvara bar the door.
In Vasya's head beat a swift litany.
It is me they want.
Out in the dooryard, Solovey squealed. The gates shook. Varvara stood nearest the door, silent. Her eyes seemed to convey something. Vasya thought she knew what it was. She knelt, stiffly, to look her niece in the face.
You must always take care of the domovoy, she said to Maria. Here, or wherever you are, you must do your best to make him strong, and he will protect the house.
Maria nodded solemnly and said,
But Vasuchka, what about you? I don't know enough.
Vasya kissed her and stood.
You will learn, she said. I love you, Masha.
She turned to Olga.
Olya,
Soon. You must send her to Alyosha at Lesnaya Zemlya. He will understand. He knew me growing up. Masha cannot stay in this tower. Not forever.
Vasya, Olga began.
Maria, puzzled, clutched at Vasya's hand.
For all of this, said Vasya. Forgive me.
She let go of Maria's hand and slipped out the door, which Varvara opened for her. For an instant, their eyes locked in a look of grim understanding. Solovey was waiting for Vasya by the palace door, seemingly calm, save that a white rim showed about his eye. The dooryard was dark. The shouting had grown louder. A splintering crash came from the gate. The light of torches gleamed between the cracking timbers. Her mind was racing. What to do? Solovey, unmistakable, was in danger. They all were. Herself, her horse, her family. Could she and Solovey hide in the stable, the door barred? No. The maddened crowd would make straight for that vulnerable terem door, for the children inside. Give herself up. Walk up to them and surrender? Perhaps they would be satisfied. Perhaps they would not break in at all. But Solovey, what would they do to him? Her horse, standing stalwart at her side, would never leave her willingly. Come on, she said. We are going to hide in the stable.
Better to run, said the horse. Better to open a gate and run.
I am not opening any gate to that mob, Vasya snapped.
She made her voice coaxing.
We must buy all the time we can, so that my brother will come with men from the Grand Prince. The gate will hold long enough. Come, we must hide.
The horse, uneasy, followed her, while the shouting rose up all around them. The great double door of the stable was made of heavy wood. Vasya opened it. The horse followed her, huffing uneasily into the dimness.
Solovey, Vasya said, drawing the door nearly to, I love you.
He nuzzled her hair, careful now of her burns, and said,
Don't be frightened. If they break the gate and come in here, we will just run away. No one will find us.
Take care of Masha, said Vasya. Perhaps one day she will learn to speak to you.
Vasya, said Solovey, throwing his head up in sudden alarm.
But she had already pushed his head away from her, slipped out the narrow opening of the door, and shut the stallion securely in the stable. Behind her she heard the stallion's furious squeal, heard also the splintering, barely audible over the shouting, of his hooves on the sturdy wood. But even Solovey could not break through the massive door. She started making her awkward way to the gate, cold and terrified. The cracks in the gates widened. A single voice soared up into the night, urging the crowd on. In answer, the shouting rose to a greater pitch. A second time the same voice called, silken, half-singing, cutting through the noise with its purity of tone. The slow, stabbing ache in Vasya's side worsened. The lamps had been put out in the tierra above. Behind her, Salove squealed again.
"Witch!"
called a powerful voice a third time. It was a summons. It was a threat. The gate was splintering faster by the instant. This time, she recognized the voice. Her breath seemed to leave her body, but when she answered, her voice didn't shake. "I am here. What do you want?" At that moment, two things happened. The gate gave way in a shower of splinters, and behind her, Salove burst the stable door and came galloping through it. Chapter 3. Nightingale. They were nearer her than Salove, but nothing was faster than the bay stallion. He was coming for her at full gallop. Vasya saw a final chance. Goad the mob into pursuit, lead it away from her sister's door. And so, as Salove flew past her, she timed his stride, running alongside him, and then leaped to his back. Pain, weakness, disappeared in the urgency of the moment. Salove was charging straight toward the smashed gate. Vasya shouted as they went, drawing the mob's eyes from the tower. Salove lashed out with all of a war stallion's viciousness, tearing through the crowd. People clawed at them, only to be flung back and away. Near the gate now, her whole being was bent on escape. On open ground, nothing could outrace the bay stallion. She could draw them off, buy time, come back with Sasha, with Dimitri's guards. Nothing could outrun Salove. Nothing. She never saw what hit them. It might have been only a log meant for someone's fireplace. All she heard was the hiss as it swung, and then she felt the shock vibrating through the stallion's flesh as the blow landed. Salove's leg went sideways. He fell, astride before the ruined gate. The crowd shrieked. Vasya felt the crack like a wound herself. Instinct rolled her clear, then she was kneeling at the horse's head. "Salove," she whispered. "Salove, get up." People pressed nearer. A hand seized her hair. She whipped round and bit it. The owner swore and fell back. The stallion struggled, kicking, but his hind leg lay at a terrible angle. "Salove," Vasya whispered. "Salove, please." The stallion breathed a soft, hay-scented breath into her face. He seemed to shudder, and the mane pouring over her hands felt spiky as feathers, as though his other, stranger nature, the bird she'd never seen, was going to fight free at last and take wing. Then a blade came down. It bit into the horse just where his head met his body. A howl went up. Vasya felt the blade go through the stallion just as though it had cut her own throat, and she did not know she was screaming as she whirled like a wolf protecting her cub.
"Kill her!" cried someone in the crowd. "There she is, the unnatural bitch! Kill her!"
Vasya launched herself at them, heedless of anything, careless of her own life. Then a man's fist fell on her, and another, until she could not feel them at all. She was kneeling in a starlit forest. The world was black and white and quite still. A brown bird fluttered in the snow just out of reach. A figure, black-haired and bone-pale, knelt beside it, extending a cupped hand toward the creature. She knew that hand, knew this place. She thought she could even see feeling behind the ancient indifference in the death god's eyes. But he was looking at the bird, not at her, and she could not be sure. He was stranger and farther away than he had ever been, his whole attention fixed on the nightingale in the snow. "Take us together," she whispered. He did not turn. "Let me come with you," she tried again. "Let me not lose my horse." Far away, she could feel the blows on her body. The nightingale hopped into the death god's hand. He closed his fingers delicately about the creature, picked it up. With his other hand, he scooped up a handful of snow. The snow melted to water in his hand. It dripped upon the bird, who at once went still and stiff. Then, at last, he raised his eyes to hers. "Vasya," he said, in a voice she knew. "Vasya, listen to me." But she could not reply. For in the true world, the crowd drew back at a word from a man's thunderous voice, and she was wrenched back to nighttime Moscow, bleeding in the trampled snow, but alive. Perhaps she only imagined it, but when she opened her blood-smeared eyes, the death god's dark figure was still beside her, fainter than a noontime shadow, eyes urgent and quite helpless. He held the stiff body of a nightingale most tenderly in one hand. Then he was gone. He might never have been there at all. She was lying across the body of her horse, sticky with his blood. Above her stood a man with golden hair, his eyes blue as midsummer. He wore the cassock of a priest and was looking at her with an expression of cold and steady triumph. Through all the long roads and the griefs of his life, Konstantin Nikonovich had one gift that had never failed him. When he spoke, crowds grew pliant at the sound of his voice. All that night, while the midnight snowstorm raged, he'd said extreme unction for the dying and comforted the wounded. Then, in the black hour before dawn, he spoke to the people of Moscow. "I cannot be silent," he said. At first his voice was low and gentle, addressing now this person, now that. As they began to pool about him, like water in the hollow of his hand, he raised his voice. "A great wrong has been done you." "Done us?" asked the soot-smeared, frightened people. "What wrong has been done us?" "This fire was God's punishment," said Konstantin. "But the crime was not yours." "Crime?" they asked, uneasy, clutching their children. "Why do you think the city burned?" Konstantin demanded. Real sorrow thickened his voice. Children, smothered with smoke, had died in their mother's arms. He could grieve for that. He was not so far gone. His words were hoarse with feeling. "The fire was God's punishment for the harboring of a witch." "A witch?" they asked. "Have we harbored a witch?" Konstantin's voice rose. "Surely you remember. The one you thought was called Vasily Petrovich? The boy, who was in truth a girl? Remember Alexander Peresviet, whom all men thought so holy, tempted into sin by his own sister? Remember how she deceived the Grand Prince? That very night the city caught fire." As he spoke, Konstantin felt their mood shift. Their rage and grief and fright were turning outward. He encouraged them in this, deliberately, deftly, like a blacksmith putting an edge on a sword blade. When they were ready, he had only to take up the weapon. "Justice must be done," said Konstantin, "but I know not how. Perhaps God will know." Now she lay in her sister's dooryard, with the blood of her horse drying on her hands. Her own blood-stained lip and cheek and her eyes were full of tears. She breathed in wrenching gasps, but she was alive. She crawled gracelessly to her feet. "Batyushka," she said. The word cracked her lip anew, and set the blood seeping down. Call them back. Her breaths came quick and painful between words. Pull them back. You have killed my horse, not my sister, not the children. The crowd spilled around and past them, their bloodlust unslaked. They were beating at the door of the palace of Serpukhov. The door was holding, just. Constantine hesitated. Lo, she added, twice I saved your life. She could barely stand. Constantine knew himself powerful, riding the crowd's fury like a rider on a half-tamed horse. Abruptly, he put his hand to the reins.
Back, he cried to his followers. Get back! The witch is here. We have taken her. Justice must be done. God will not wait.
She shut her eyes in relief, or perhaps it was weakness. She did not fall at his feet. She did not thank him for his mercy. Venomously, he said,
You will come with me and answer to God's justice.
She opened her eyes again, stared at him, but did not seem to see. Her lips moved in a single word, not his name, not a plea for mercy, but Solovey. Her body bent suddenly, with grief more than pain, bowed as though she'd been arrow-shot.
The horse is dead, he said,
and saw her take the words like fists.
Perhaps now you will turn your mind to things proper for a woman, in the time that is left to you.
She said nothing. Her eyes lost.
Your fate is decided, Constantine added, bending nearer, as though he could force the words through her mind. The people have been wronged. They want justice.
What fate is that? She whispered through bruised lips. Her face was the color of the snow.
I advise you, he whispered gently, to pray.
She threw herself at him like a creature wounded. He almost laughed with unlooked-for joy when a blow from another man's fist flung her down, crumpled at his feet. Chapter 4. The Fate of All Witches.
What is that noise?
Dmitri demanded. Few of his gate guards had survived the night unwounded. The few that had all seemed to be shouting. Outside the walls of his palace came a tumult of voices and the sound of many feet in the snow. The only light in his dooryard was torchlight. The noise in the city rose steadily. There came a shattering crash.
Mother of God, said Dmitri, have we not had trouble enough already?
He turned his head to snap swift orders. Next moment, the postern opened amid a flurry of shouting. A servant with yellow hair strode without diffidence up to the Grand Prince, trailing Dmitri's bewildered retainers in her wake.
What is this? Dmitri demanded, staring.
That is my sister's body servant, said Sasha.
Varvara, what do?
Varvara had a bruised cheek, and her expression chilled him to the marrow.
Those people you hear, Varvara snapped, had broken the gates of the palace of Serpukhov. They killed the bay stallion that Vasilisa loved.
Here, Sasha began to feel the blood draining from his face,
and they have dragged off the girl herself.
Where? Said Sasha, his voice remote and terrible. Beside him, Dmitri was already calling for horses, for men at arms.
Yes, even if they are wounded, get them on horses. It cannot wait.
Down, said Varvara, panting. Down toward the river. I fear they mean to kill her.
Vasya was nearly senseless with the mob's fists, her clothes torn and bloodied. She was borne along, half-dragged, half-carried, and the world was full of noise, shouting, a cold, beautiful voice controlling the crowd, and the word endlessly murmured,
Father, Batyushka.
Down, They were going downhill. She stumbled in the hardened slush of the street. Hands, many hands, scoured her body. Her cloak and